Good morning.
Yes, it is.
Go ahead and be seated. Welcome. All right. The next and last matter on our docket today is 69408 Western Cap versus District Court. And Ms. Koska, are you ready to proceed?
I am, Your Honor.
Would you like to reserve any time?
Yes, I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
May it please the court, my name is Milani Kochka and I represent Western Cap Company.
Ms. Koska, I'd like to start off with a question right off the bat. How's this?
Oh, actually, please, Terry is appearing from Las Vegas, just so you, and I can't see
I didn't
the
mean
screen
to
here, but you did, you made me jump,
so.
I forgot you were on the little screen. So he's participating in the deliberations, and he, in fact, has a question for you right now.
I'm going to ask you this question and also your opposing counsel this question, too. We've had four cases. We've had Thomas, Yellow Cab, MDC Restaurants, and Perry. Is there anything in those cases, whether it be by analytics or dictum, which we're famous for, that support your position?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that for one of our arguments, the MDC case, in which you held that the income from the employer did not include tips and could not be counted as part of the 10% on the health benefit cost, I believe that decision supports our argument on the gas issue, in which we argue that our requirement that the employees, the cab drivers, return their cars with a full tank of gas, which is to be paid from their tips, both declared and undeclared, and their vendor's fees. We believe that the MDC case supports our analysis that the cost of the gasoline should not be deducted from the minimum wages or the compensation that we pay our employees, because tips are expressly excluded by the minimum wage amendment for consideration in minimum wage. And therefore, the arguments that Mr. Greenberg makes about it being that requiring our employees to do that requires them to kick back their wages. Indeed, I think that argument really doesn't apply anymore, because you have decided already that tips are not part of the wages paid to employees.
Ms. Kochka,
yes.
Apart from that point, but related, I'm a bit confused from the record as to whether or not the obligation for the drivers to pay fuel costs is part of a collective bargaining agreement or not. And I'm hoping you and Mr. Greenberg can clear that up, because my question is, if it is, why are we here? Why should we entertain this writ? Shouldn't the district court vet that question, decide it? If it were true and that was the case, then it conceivably would make it unnecessary for us to reach these various constitutional arguments that are made. And I'm concerned about resolving this case with what would amount to a bunch of advisory opinions on ERISA and preemption and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Okay, Your Honor, Judge Hardesty, the district court actually held that this case did not involve collective bargaining or a union, but the district court was wrong, and I'll explain.
Yeah, what are the facts showing?
Yeah, the facts show.
I understand what this court said, but what are the facts?
The facts are that Western Cab has what's called an exclusive bargaining relationship with the Steelworkers Union, which is an AFL-CIO affiliate. We have no collective bargaining agreement. What has happened to date is we have negotiated for a collective bargaining agreement, but we have not reached an agreement. Therefore, we are at a place under the National Labor Relations Act where our wages and our gas requirement are imposed what we call unilaterally, because we have reached an impasse in bargaining. And so that's what has happened in our situation, but we do not have a collective bargaining agreement that covers the issue. But we have reached an impasse, And so the wages that we pay, the wage structure, the commissions, and the fact that we require the fuel payments to be paid from tips, all of that has been bargained about, and it has been unilaterally implemented by the employer pursuant to the National Labor Relations Act, which is why this case is a little confusing.
Isn't there also a factual question that would impact this issue, and that is whether or not the fuel costs would cause the wages paid even under respondents or party in interest position to be above or below the minimum wage?
No, I don't believe so, Your Honor, because we require that the fuel costs, that the drivers fill their tanks up through their tips, both their declared and undeclared, and the vendor's fees. That's our policy. So in other words, the minimum wage or the wages we paid are based on their commissions, which is a book formula. Those wages are not impacted at all.
So have these facts been developed in the district court yet, for the district court?
Yes, there are two affidavits by Martha Sarver, which you will find on pages 91 of the appendix, 257 through 285 of the appendix, where those facts are stated and not disputed by the plaintiffs, or by Pereira, I'm sorry. And then the affidavit of Gregory Smith explaining the bargaining position is at 673 to 674 of the appendix.
Well, I understand they're in the appendix, but my question is, has the district court reached this issue yet? Reached these factual issues?
No, the district court, all of these issues have been litigated before the district court on a motion to amend the complaint. And so we have not gotten past.
So if the facts were as you argue they should be?
Yes.
Why would this court entertain this writ now and reach these various constitutional questions, which likely would amount to nothing more than advisory opinions?
Well, we believe that they're more than an advisory opinion because under Rule 15, as you well know, futility is a basis to deny a motion to amend and to deny the right to assert these various theories. And so
you've got an adequate remedy on appeal if you lose on these factual questions.
Well, really, we don't, Your Honor. As you've addressed in your other cases that we were just talking about, the interpretation of the minimum wage amendment, it affects multiple businesses and multiple employees. And so whether it's constitutional even to begin with, and whether the district court can order us to defend the theory on the gas because the gas should be deducted from the wages paid, those issues are critical to a lot of businesses and employees in the state of Nevada. And as you held in the...
I don't see in your petition you've identified other cases where there's a fuel cost offset. I don't see that.
No. The cases of which I'm aware do not raise the issue, at least not yet anyway, of the fuel cost offset. Almost all of the taxi cab companies consider fuel cost in their compensation formula, but they do it in different ways. And I'm not sure that there is another case exactly like ours. But if we have to defend this all the way through trial, and if we have to wait to have the constitutionality determined, we will have to have gone through an awful lot of litigation.
Maybe. But it sounds like the factual questions surrounding the fuel cost offset can be resolved on summary judgment. Based on what you've told me, that's what I'm trying to get at. If the facts are as you suggest they are, either because they're part of a bargain for amount through the NLRB, or the facts are that they're being paid through tips, not through minimum wage, sounds like that would be a summary judgment motion that would resolve the case. as again, for your client, as to liability.
Well, I don't think there's been any counter factual evidence, let's put it that way. Mr. Greenberg is not, he has said in the proposed amended complaint that that the amount of the, or that the gas is being paid from their own income, their own personal income, which is the tips. I don't think he denies that many drivers are paying for the fuel costs with their tips and their vendors' fees. I'm not sure that's disputed. If it's undisputed, whether it comes up in a summary judgment or whether it comes up in a futility argument under Rule 15, it leads to the same result.
Well, but it might also result in your client being out of the case without even having to get to the constitutional question. So that's, I guess what I'm trying to, we've taken a lot of your time, and I apologize for that, but I'm trying to understand why we should entertain this writ. And so your argument is because it affects a bunch of other cases.
It affects other cases, and I think even Mr. Greenberg has agreed that you should consider the writ on the merits.
Well,
yes, I understand.
Lots of times counsel agree we should talk about or entertain writs. That doesn't necessarily mean that fits within our jurisprudence.
Okay. I would like to reserve the time.
All right. And I know we asked quite a few questions. I'll give you your full 5 minutes, and I'll give Mr. Greenberg an additional minute as well.
May it please the court, I'm Leon Greenberg. I'm arguing today on behalf of Real Parties in Interest Respondent.
Let me ask you the same question, Mr. Greenberg, that I asked Ms. Tachka about the Thomas Yellow Cab MDC restaurants in Perry. Is there anything in the analytics or dicta that supports your position in those cases?
Well, yes, there are two issues that the court commented on in those decisions that do address some of the arguments made in the petition. One argument, and really the essential argument that underlies the petition, is this idea that somehow the purpose underlying the minimum wage amendment is improper, because it was really to advance this union AFL-CIO agenda, encourage unionization, and somehow interfere with the national collective bargaining labor relations scheme. There's no basis for that conclusion. I mean, we do have in the record the statements by Mr. Thompson advocating for the amendment, and they sponsored the amendment and so forth. But that doesn't establish the purpose of the amendment. The purpose of the amendment is in the language of the amendment itself, what it actually compels as a matter of law. This court in the MDC decision at page 9 did comment on the purpose of the minimum wage amendment, looking at the ballot measure itself and agreed that its purpose was to raise minimum wages, which is what it commands. So I think that's important for this court to understand. The other issue that I think is important to draw from the recent decisions was in Perry v. Terrible Herbst. This court was called upon to resolve this question of the statute of limitations applicable to claims under the minimum wage amendment. It did so by looking at the existing structure of Nevada's law and borrowing or adopting the two-year statute of limitations that exists for minimum wage claims under the pre-existing statutory scheme. Now, in the petition, there is an argument made that the minimum wage amendment contains this health insurance requirement that is vague and not capable of being followed. And as discussed in the briefs that were filed by myself and by Amicus, Nevada has an existing statutory scheme in Section Chapter 608 talking about what constitutes health insurance offered by employers, which makes reference to the provisions in the insurance code regulating group health plans and individual health plans. So I would submit that based upon Your Honor's approach in Perry, a similar approach should be utilized here in respect to this petition to resolve that issue as well. To address Justice Hardesty, you were questioning about some of the facts before the district court. And the fact that, as claimed by the defendant, by the petitioners here, the tips received by the employees cover the cost of the fuel, that's not established factually. It's also not established factually that there actually was a bargaining to impasse and that the gas payment requirement was imposed as part of a collective bargaining process. It is true that there has been an election, and the steelworkers are the certified representative, and it's true there's no CBA. But based upon the record before the district court, there's no reason to conclude that that policy came out of a bargaining process with the union. But in terms of the issue itself as to the forced payments on the taxi drivers of the fuel costs, the minimum wage amendment itself states that tips received by the employee shall not be credited towards the obligation that is imposed on the employer here. So what the employer is doing is, rather than taking the fuel costs from the entire collected fares and then dividing the fares however they would divide them and being sure that the employee gets at least the minimum hourly wage, they're essentially shifting that cost off the books and telling the employee, well, here, we're going to pay you a portion of the fares that meets the minimum wage, but we're going to rent you the taxi cab, essentially, and you're going to have to pay the rent, not to us directly in cash, but in the form of the gas that's necessary to run the taxi, because you can't work without fuel in your taxi cabs.
Well, it used to, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it started out as a deduction from their paychecks for the fuel costs, wasn't it?
That is correct, Your Honor.
So what's the distinction whether or not there's a deduction from the paycheck or whether or not they're required to bring in a full cab?
That's correct. Pay. And the reason why this was done, Your Honor, and that is the practice historically in the industry, which is that either the fuel cost comes off the top and then they divide what's left, or maybe they divide it first and then they take the fuel cost off of the driver's piece, so to speak, and then what remains is what the driver's gross wages are. And that is what Western Cab did initially. However, in 2011 or 2012, the United States Department of Labor audited their operations, found there were deficiencies under the federal minimum wage law, and they shifted to the policy of splitting the book, so to speak, without allocating for the fuel and just telling the drivers it's your responsibility to pay for the fuel on your own, essentially forcing them to assume that expense off the books. There's nothing
in the But let me just mechanically, if a driver has a day where he received zero tips, let's say he was in a horrible mood and nobody wanted to give him a tip, would he have to pay fuel for that day, or because he received no tips that day, would that be something the employer would have to pay?
As far as we know, he has to pay it regardless. There's nothing in the record. The petitioner asserts that the fuel costs were always covered by the tips that the drivers received, but we have nothing in the record actually established.
Okay, so there's no written agreement that in the event you get no tips for whatever reason, we paid for the fuel.
That is correct. There is certainly nothing in the record establishing that an allowance was made by the employer here, the petitioner, to review that and make an appropriate allowance.
Then I return to Justice Hardesty's question, which is, if there's a factual dispute about whether or not the fuel cost deduction either does or doesn't only come from tip income, and tip income is outside the purview of the MWA, is that a factual issue that should be developed before we dive into the constitutional issues in the case?
Well, it's our position that it's an irrelevant issue because the employer is charging the employees to work here by making them pay for the gas that goes into the taxi. This is akin to the hotel operator charging the housekeepers rent for their carts that they run down the aisles to go clean out the rooms. You're going to pay $5 a day to rent this cart, maybe from some independent agency.
I understand that argument.
Yes.
And it is an argument that has some concern for me, but that said, if the taxi cab driver still ends up getting paid the minimum wage even after paying his or her gas, how is there a violation of the MDA?
There is a violation because the minimum wage amendment requires that the minimum wage be paid without any credit or reduction in its obligation based upon tips received by the employee. The fuel cost the employee is paying is an absolutely necessary expense of the business operation. The taxi company cannot send the taxis out as part of their business without fuel in the tank. Instead of assuming that cost themselves or factoring that cost into the entire operation and what the driver gets paid after commission, they are making the worker assume 100% of that cost. So it does act as a credit towards their minimum wage obligation. Let's just assume that factually it is established that the employees can always cover the fuel cost out of their tips. How is that not a credit against the employer's obligation under the minimum wage amendment? Because the employer, if it didn't get the employee to pay those fuel costs, would have to pay those fuel costs themselves. It's the same thing as a matter of economics as if they just deducted it from the pay and said, well, you're making $2 an hour in tips, so I can pay you $2 an hour less in minimum wages. This point that employers are not allowed to shift expenses onto their employees and ignore the ramifications in respect to their minimum wage obligations is well established under federal labor law. The minimum wage, the Fair Labor Standards Act, has explicitly outlawed any sort of arrangements of this nature. Now, petitioners argue that, well, Nevada law doesn't address this, the minimum wage amendment doesn't address it. Well, in Thomas versus Yellow Cab, the minimum wage amendment didn't expressly address the superseding of the prior exemptions from Nevada's minimum wage statute. In the Terry case, this court was dealing with other issues, important issues, regarding what constitutes employment within the concept of Nevada's minimum wage law. And as Terry pointed out, unless there's a good reason for this court to deviate from established principles under the Fair Labor Standards Act, it will not do so. And it didn't in Terry. It adopted an economic realities analysis for the purpose of determining the employment relationship. That same reasoning should apply here. If this court was to recognize petitioner's claim here and say this was proper, the minimum wage amendment would become unenforceable as a matter of practice. And the anti-tip-taking or the anti-tip-crediting provision of the amendment, even if the court was just to limit it to situations arguably as here, where the tips could cover those expenses, would essentially be confused. The purpose of anti-tip-crediting provision is to ensure that the employee gets that minimum wage plus the tips that they get from the server, the customer. So the company can't credit them towards it or reduce their financial obligation to the employee. So I do understand that the court certainly doesn't have to reach any of the issues in the petition. That's within the discretion of the court. But there could be utility in doing so in terms of resolving this issue. And I certainly would like to answer any further questions or thoughts I might have about that issue, but I do think Your Honor understands my point.
I understand your point, absolutely, but perhaps there's one other issue I could raise. By invoking the Fair Labor Standards Act's limitation on employer downloading those costs, don't you create a slippery slope into the preemption argument? That seems to be a problem for me.
I'm not understanding why that implicates the issue of preemption, Your Honor.
Well, I don't know that there's anything in the MDA itself that precludes the employer from doing what they did here. So you're arguing they can't do it because of fair labor regulations and requirements and limitations.
Your Honor,
that takes us into some of the issues that are raised in the petition about the application of preemption here.
Your Honor, that is not my argument. The regulations...
Maybe I misheard you, but...
The regulations under the CFR and what the Fair Labor Standards Act has established in this area don't guide this court. I mean, that doesn't control what the Minimum Wage Act can do. The Minimum Wage Act in this court decides the law of Nevada.
So let's stick to the MDA. Where in the MDA is there a prohibition against the employer requiring the cab drivers to pay the fuel costs so long as the net effect is that the employees still get paid the minimum wage?
Well, Your Honor, the last sentence of Section A of the Minimum Wage Act says, tips or gratuities received by employees shall not be credited as being any part of or offset against the wage rates required by this section. This is acting as an offset. What the employer is saying is, rather than myself being burdened with paying you your $7.25 an hour and also paying for the necessary fuel that's got to go into that taxi so you can do your job. And you're not driving that taxi for yourself. You're driving that taxi for me. It's part of my business operation. I'm going to make you pay for that fuel. And okay, you can pay for that fuel out of your tips. I'm only going to make you pay for that fuel the extent you can pay for it out of your tips. How is that not using the tips as an offset against the economic burden that's being placed on the employer here? Rather than the employer pay that fuel cost, which is necessary to the operation of their business, and pay that minimum wage, they're essentially usurping a portion of the employee's tips to lower the cost of doing business.
So is that argument and that issue, though, squared up in this petition? I don't see that.
Well, Your Honor, the district court judge did not really elaborate on this issue in her decision, but she clearly agreed by allowing the amendment to the complaint to make this claim. And this was argued to her.
Isn't that whole question fundamental to whether we should entertain a writ that raises a series of constitutional questions?
Well, Your Honor, it is a fundamental issue here. Okay? I absolutely agree. And if the company is not allowed to engage in this kind of, and I'm calling it chicanery, Your Honor, but maybe that's disrespectful, but if they're not allowed to engage in this sort of sleight of hand accounting, then we're not really concerned with whether the taxi drivers could pay it out of their tips or not, because it's prohibited within the scope of the amendment's commands. And again, if the employer is allowed to do this, it would render the minimum wage amendment impractical, unenforceable as a matter of law. I mean, it's just, for example, in the same way that in Terry, this court held that the fact that the dances agreed to be independent contractors was not controlling on their status as employees under the minimum wage amendment, because you can't waive your rights under it. So,
Mr. Greenberg, do you view your current complaint as challenging the employer's right to charge fuel costs based on your interpretation of that provision of the MDA?
I believe it does, Your Honor. It does plead that the forced payment of the fuel costs are causing this violation here. My time seems to be expiring. I do want to address whatever the point.
Your answer to Justice Hardesty's question, unless you're satisfied.
No, I'm satisfied with the response.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
There are other issues raised in the petition. I've tried to address what the court asked of the issues that are raised. I do not believe there's any real issue raised as to federal preemption here regarding either ERISA or the National Labor Relations Act. There really is no authority whatsoever in any analogous circumstance showing that those federal laws would preempt the operation of the sort of general, broadly applicable minimum wage standard that we have here in Nevada. The only exceptions that can be cited, and there are a couple by petitioner, involve much more.
Actually, you're getting way beyond your time, so I'm going to stop you now. Colleagues, do you have any other questions? Justice Charity, any questions?
No more questions.
I didn't hear you.
No more questions.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, if I could address several matters very quickly. Mr. Greenberg addressed the purpose in the language at page 9 of the MDC. My point to this court about the purpose of the minimum wage amendment is that the court did not have before it in that case the declarations of Danny Thompson, which can be found at 663 to 671 of the appendix. The second point I wanted to bring to the court is on the health insurance. The ERISA preemption argument goes to both the amendment and the regulations. NAC 608.102, the Labor Commissioner defines what is meant by health benefits and health insurance in the minimum wage amendment, even though no authority was delegated to the Labor Commissioner to make this decision. While the district court found that the Labor Commissioner does have authority to interpret and enact regulations on labor law, I would suggest that a lot of these regulations, including NAC 608.102, are regulations on health insurance and health benefits. To my knowledge, the Labor Commissioner has no expertise in this area, and it's not at all clear that they had the right to enact those regulations. Finally, getting back to the minimum wage amendment. The minimum wage amendment does not address either business expenses or gas. Our drivers frequently take what's called an unreimbursed business expense deduction on their federal tax returns. Therefore, they do get a benefit from paying for the gas out of their wages. Also, I believe a misrepresentation was made. Western Cab has never deducted gas from the payroll checks of its employees. Before the first Department of Labor audit, Western Cab bought the gas, fueled the cabs at the property before they took the cabs out. Then after the audit, they asked DOL, you know, is there some way we can have the drivers pay for the gas? And DOL's response was, if it's not on the paycheck, it doesn't count. So we never deducted the cost of gas. What we started requiring was when the drivers go out, their cabs are filled with a full tank of gas. And what we started requiring was that when they come back, that they return it with a full tank of gas and that they pay for the gas out of their tips and their various referral fees. And by that, I'm referring to things like strip clubs, gun clubs, all kinds of places in town will get a cab driver a fee if they take the customer to these places.
On that point, though, could you address Justice Pickering's hypothetical? What is the situation where the cab driver doesn't receive tips? Doesn't the cost invade the MDA?
No, because it's not considered under the wage that we paid. That amount can still be paid from tips or vendor's fees from prior days or later days. We don't consider it in our payroll checks. Our payroll checks are based on their commissions, which are based on their books, their booking percentage of 50%. And so we don't consider gas one way or the other. We simply pay them the commissions. And under the minimum wage amendment, we are required in that paycheck to pay them a minimum wage of either the $7.25 or the $8.25, depending on the health insurance issue. So we consider whether minimum wage is paid after Thomas, and we round up paychecks if it's not, you know, or issue a supplemental paycheck, but we do not consider the issue of gas at all. It's not deducted, it's not added, it's simply not treated. And while Mr. Greenberg argued that offset provision under Section A of the Act addresses the situation, that's simply not true. If you offset, you would be subtracting the tips from the wages and in order to meet the minimum wage obligation. And that is not what we do. We don't consider the tips. We don't touch the tips. The drivers handle all their own tips. There's no tip pooling. It goes to them.
Go ahead and finish your statement.
Well, it's just that it goes directly to the drivers. The tips go to them, and we have no involvement in their tips whatsoever.
All right, very good. Colleagues, any questions? Justice Cherry, any questions?
No.
Okay, then. Thank you, counsel, for your briefing in this matter. Thank you for your arguments today. This case will stand submitted, and the court will stand in recess until the next.